Calling all lovers of mystery and fans of a good story. If you haven't already heard me talk about June's journey, you're in for a treat. It's time to don your detective hat in this free hidden object mobile game that delves into the captivating journey of June Parker, a self-proclaimed detective on a quest to unravel the mystery surrounding her sister's untimely death. In June's journey, you get to play as June, deciphering clues and unveiling secret plots within thousands of beautifully illustrated scenes. And did I mention it's set in the glitzy 1920s? New chapters are added weekly, so you will never run out of new thrills to uncover, and you can also personalize and decorate your very own Orchid Island where the story takes place. How sharp are your detective skills? Find out when you download June's Journey on your Android or iOS device, or play online via Facebook Games. Your detective journey awaits.
Are you thinking about getting into Dungeons & Dragons? Maybe you're looking to expand your horizons as a DM or a player. If that's the case, then it's time for you to check out the Dungeon Cast, the best D&D podcast out there that helps you passively learn all about the game just by listening. Join co-hosts Will and Brian as they break down the lore of a rich multiverse 50 years in the making in a lighthearted and beginner-friendly way. They cover everything from character creation options to tips for dungeon masters. There's something for everyone, no matter how long you've been playing TTRPGs. Find the Dungeon Cast anywhere you get podcasts or on YouTube.
Welcome, everybody, to another edition of IGN Unfiltered, our monthly interview series where I have the distinct privilege of sitting down with the best, brightest, most interesting minds in the games industry. And today, Cissy Jones, so kind to join me. Thank you so much for being here, number one.
Thank you so much for having me.
You are an accomplished voice actor, over 50 games on your resume so far.
And those are the ones you know about.
Yeah, and we're you know, just the most recent one now, Darksiders 3. You're playing Fury,
yes,
the lead character in that series, which everybody's been wanting to come back for a while, and here it's finally coming at
no
the
pressure.
End of November. Yeah. So it's voice acting has always been so fascinating to me. So thank you for being here, and I'm going to ask you a million questions about that, about what that life is like.
I'm game.
So I want to start with just that long, impressive resume. Do any of those 50-plus credits sort of stand out to you as particularly memorable?
Well, I mean, Firewatch will always hold a
we'll get to
very
that.
Special place.
Yes,
in
we'll
my
get
heart.
To that.
But I, you know, the place where it all began really was The Walking Dead. My first job as a voice actor was Katya, and from that job, I got to work with Sean Vanneman and Jake Rodkin and the incredible team at Telltale, and I met Melissa Hutchison, who's Clementine, and Owen Thomas, who's Omid, and Gavin Hammond, who's Kenny, and, you know, all these people who are still very, very dear friends to this day. I just spoke with them yesterday about I'm coming up to IGN. That game changed everything for me. I had just switched careers, and having that happen was kind of the green light of, like, okay, you made the right call.
Yeah.
Good job, kid.
You know?
Yeah.
So how does that happen? Do they, is it an audition thing? Does somebody at Telltale see you in some, or hear you in something else? Like, well, I'm curious how that moment
Well,
comes
not at
to
that
be.
Point, because I hadn't been in anything else. That was an audition that came through my agent. So all the women on that roster auditioned for all the female roles.
Oh,
so I auditioned for Clementine. I auditioned for Lily and Carly and on and on. But there was something about Katya that spoke to me. There was a dignified quietude to her, for lack of a better word. But she reminded me very much of someone that I hold near and dear to my heart. And so I was able to kind of channel that person into her emotional state. But then also I had to figure out a Belgian accent. So I have a friend who is Belgian, and I followed him around with a tape recorder for a little bit too long. And I did some research online and, you know, found an accent for someone who'd been living in the States for 20 years and had a touch of an accent, but not too much of an accent,
right.
And luckily it worked.
So that's obviously then it's in the script, and it's like, okay, Katya is Belgian,
yeah.
So does that become, because I was going to ask you, I'm glad you brought up accents, is it terrifying when you're like, oh, there's an accent, this character's an accent, or is it just fun? You just roll up your sleeves and like, yes, this is super fun.
I love it. I think it's super fun. It adds an extra layer to a character, because it's not just an accent, it's about the way of life growing up in Belgium. What's that like? She's this age, so she's seen some stuff, you know, post-war and blah, blah, blah.
Right.
So that all kind of goes into it, too. Where it gets really nerve-wracking is when I've got British people judging my British accent in a British performance. So let's hope that doesn't go off the rails. But otherwise, no, it's a ton of fun.
So you kind of hinted at this already, but what was your childhood dream career? You know, you found this, as an adult, voice acting. So where does the Cissy Jones story begin, and where do the dreams of Cissy Jones start?
I remember I was about 6 years old, and I was watching Scooby-Doo. And I realized one day that all of the characters had these little black lines around their body shapes. And I was like, oh, they're not real. There's a person back there. But I didn't know what it was called. I didn't know it was called voiceover.
Yeah.
I, for the longest time, wanted to be a voice on The Simpsons or Family Guy. I just thought, God, that looks like so much fun. And I remember having a conversation with my now husband about how my dream job would be to be a voice on The Simpsons. And about 2 weeks after we had that conversation, I heard Nancy Cartwright, who is Bart Simpson, on the radio talking about The Simpsons movie and talking about voiceover and how it was such a great career and yakety yak. And she pointed me in the direction of a school, voiceover school, that I started going to, and it changed everything. I had had a completely different career up until that point.
Wow. So, because I've heard there's a couple here. There's one that's like Voice One and a couple in San Francisco. So, yeah, what do you learn in voice acting school?
Well, you learn how to voice act.
I mean, is it more of a confidence thing or a technique or I guess all of it, right?
Yeah. So I came at it with no acting background at all. So for me, it was really learning acting. But also, there's a lot of subtleties in voiceover that aren't necessary for an on-camera career or a theatrical career. You don't have the luxury of facial expressions or body language. You have to convey that with your voice,
yeah.
Right? So it's learning, how do you convey an eyebrow raise? little things like that. But then also learning the differences between the genres of animation versus video game versus commercial versus promo versus narration versus trailer and on and on.
Wow.
Yeah, and so they're all very specific muscles that you have to learn to train.
So do you feel best behind the mic? Would you want to be in front of the camera at some point? Like what's
I love voiceover. I love it. I eat, sleep, breathe it. I love that I can be this wonderful middle-aged woman from Belgium one day, or I can be an anthropomorphic nail file the next day. That's not hyperbole. I actually am an anthropomorphic nail file in a show on Amazon. I love it. I can't get enough of it. No, I don't want to do it on camera.
Well, that does sort of lead me up to I'm again fascinated by this process of so do you warm up? Do you warm up your voice before you
Sometimes.
Go into the booth?
If I know it's going to be particularly stressful, yes. If I know I've got to do accent work, I'll be talking in my accent the whole way to the session.
Right.
For Katya, we recorded a 10-minute walk from my house, so I would walk to the recording studio with just like, oh, there's the bus stop, and I wonder what time the bus is coming. Kind of go through the accent in my head so that it was in there by the time I got in the booth. Because the worst thing you can do is lose it in the middle of a session or get it confused with another one. Southern is the worst. I always get Southern confused in there sometimes if I have to switch between the two. So it's making sure they're compartmentalized and separate.
I love that.
Occupational hazards of a voice actor.
So are you super paranoid about getting sick, about your voice?
As yes.
It, you see you're drinking water now and... not like some sugary
whiskey
drink.
Later.
Yeah, I don't know. Are you just super protective of that instrument
then?
Yeah.
Yeah, I do my vitamin C every day. When I travel, I do the airborne, constantly washing hands. I got sick a couple years ago for 6 weeks. I couldn't work for six
wow.
weeks. I'm a contractor, man. Any day I don't work is a day I don't get paid.
Yeah.
I went into labor during a recording session because you just don't want to not be there. I'm super paranoid about it always, and it's sometimes you get sick and sometimes you miss it.
So have you ever had to lose out on a gig because
of
it?
I have, and it's heartbreaking.
That's I can't even.
I have a friend here in San Francisco who was going to be like the voice of Lysol, which like in voiceover, the money is in nationwide
big
union
campaign.
Television commercials, yeah. Right? They are unicorns. More and more they're going to celebrities. But she, this wonderful workaday voice actress, got Lysol and it was going to be the thing. And she got laryngitis the night before lost it.
Wow.
And, yeah, it is terrifying. But that also goes into, you know, vocally stressful sessions a lot of times with video games if they have you screaming for hours on end. You know, I did one for a game that I actually have gotten to a point where I don't audition them if I know they're going to be super screamers. So they brought me in without an audition, and it was 4 hours of screaming at 9 o'clock in the morning. And by the time I left, my throat was bleeding. Couldn't talk, and I had to cancel my commercial session for that afternoon, which is my bread and butter. So yeah, it's there's a lot of self-care that has to happen in this little segment.
Man, is there what's your ideal time to work then? Because it's clearly not 9 a.m.
I don't mind it now. you know, extenuating circumstances have me up earlier. You know, I like working all hours of the day, and I do. You know, I do a lot of work in trailers, which is very last minute turnaround, especially for, you know, sound alikes and things like that. And yeah. So I've worked at 11:30 at night, and I've worked at, you know, 7 a.m, and I've worked on camping trips, and I have my little recording rig that I take with me everywhere. And
is nighttime better? Because like that's when rock concerts happen, right? that's when rock stars are out there singing. Is it 9 o'clock at night?
Yeah, it just, you know, as long as if I know I have a session at 9, I'm up at 6, so I can get everything warmed up and not sound like a dude.
So, without necessarily naming any names, I'm curious about some of the different ways in which game developers handle voice acting and voice actors. Do you have any sort of just stories or examples of how one game developer might totally handle you and the part differently than another?
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of across the board from we're not going to tell you anything to literally not even knowing the name of the game to, you know, to where Campo Santo was really happy to have me be involved with it and talking to press and, you know, doing all of that. It's totally different across the board. I've literally done sessions where I don't know what it is I'm going in for.
Wow.
I do the thing, and I don't know that I'm in the thing until the thing is out. And people on Twitter are like, hey, are you in blah, blah, blah? And I'm like, nah, man. And then they send me a clip. It sounds like you. And I'm like, yeah, wow, yep, that's me. Sometimes I'll get a script ahead of time. It's rare. A lot of times I'm starting to see now where there's a little more collaborative effort between the devs and the actors of, like, you know, working on Darksiders 3 has been such a joy because they've been super open to my feedback. You know, they had like she said, I don't want to blah, 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 or I don't think, yada, yada. And I was like, this is not a woman who uses contractions. It sounds silly, but she wants everybody to know, to listen to every single word she says. She does not contract words,
right.
And they've been super cool about just little things like that, you know, and giving me a full breakdown of what's happening and actually knowing the name of the game. So that's good.
I cannot fathom the idea of not even knowing. Like, how does that benefit them? Because you can't prepare.
Well, I think, you know, I see both sides of it, truly, because there are some actors, not a lot, but enough to spoil it for the rest of us, who just want those Twitter followers, and they'll post things online and they'll leak scripts. I heard a story the other day of a guy in a session doing a Facebook Live recording, putting it on Facebook as it was happening, and I'm like, you're never going to work again. What are you thinking?
Yeah, it seems like a bad idea. A little short-sighted.
Yeah. So, you know, there have unfortunately been a few people that have leaked scripts, and you know, that hurts the dev. I get that.
Man, I would just think you just don't hire those people anymore.
Ever again.
And then bring in and give the pre-briefing to the people you do trust. But
yeah.
What do I know?
I guess.
I don't know.
I mean, we sign NDAs, but I don't know.
Huh. What does a typical workday look like for you? Because, you know, I think there was, I'm thinking of this forever ago, and I'm probably representing it somehow. I remember seeing some video on YouTube an eternity ago of that Don LaFontaine, the like classic movie voiceover guy.
Yeah.
How he'd like, you know, he'd kind of get up, they'd pick him up in a limo, take him to the gig, and he'd do the trailer, and then that was like, so that's like this glorified, fancy version
Listen,
of it. But
well, he's like the Brad Pitt of voiceovers, right? Maybe Brad Pitt's a little dated at this time anyway. No, I do not have a limo that drives me from job to job. I mean, it's wake up, see what auditions are sitting in my inbox, crank them out if I need to, or get to a session if I need to. I mean, honestly, some days I'll have 10 sessions, some weeks I'll have 10 sessions,
yeah.
Some weeks I'll have two. It's figuring out how to manage the time that's not booked and not drive yourself crazy.
And so I know you mentioned your recording thing that you bring with you. Do you have a studio at home?
Yes, yeah. Absolutely.
So that was a big investment, a worthwhile investment, no doubt, in your line of work.
Yeah, I do about 80% of my auditions from home, and probably 20% of my jobs from home.
Okay.
I love to go to a studio if I can, because then all the technical problems are someone else's job. Yeah, so I have a home studio. I also rent an office space with a couple of other people that has ISDN, which is kind of phasing out, but still some clients really, really want it. And I have a portable setup that I take everywhere.
Nice.
Yeah.
Is it easier? Do you find that it's easier to get away from home, just to like, then you're completely removed from, from like the... any other distractions, anything that might be, even you might even be thinking about at home, like
from that pile that's been sitting there,
like the laundry pile or
really
whatever,
do
right?
Something about that, yeah. It is nice to get away, which is why I try to do jobs away from home. I try to go into my agents to audition when I can. Yeah, for sure.
What was I going to ask? Oh, so one of the things I think this fits into something you were talking about earlier. It's just looking over your resume. You're credited as voicing the local population in Grand Theft Auto V. What does that even mean? I think I have an idea, but I figure I'd best ask you.
Tell me your idea.
Well, my suspicion is that means you're just one of the pedestrians. They call everybody that voices a pedestrian part of the local population, but
yes.
I'm curious what that actually means.
More specifically, I'm a prostitute. You can light on fire, throw out a window, and steal my car.
Oh, all right.
So, yeah. Go GTA 5.
And did you know that that was the role? Is that one of those games where you... because that's one where I figure the secrecy is so intense they don't even tell you it's Grand Theft.
No, it was under a fake name. That was one of the ones where it came out and I didn't even know I was in it. Someone on Twitter was like, I just saw your prostitute in GTA 5. And I was like, what? Okay. Yeah.
So you just... you get in there and you just have
that's
prostitute related dialogue
pretty much,
and you just knock out the dialogue and hope for the best, I guess,
best
or
can.
How does that work?
Death by fire, death by thrown out a window, getting pissed at someone for stealing your car. Yeah.
Do you bring an accent to that? I don't want to like make light of that role specifically, but how in a situation like that where they don't tell you what the game is and it's just here are the lines of dialogue, do they tell you exactly how they want it, or do you have freedom to sort of try to make something out of it? Or
it depends. You know, if I remember correctly, that one they were like, listen, this is in XYZ city, no accent. This is the person that you are. Like, it's basically a fly-by-night thing. So,
yeah.
You know, you don't spend a ton of time on the character creation of said prostitute. But but sometimes, you know, in Shadow of War, it was a very specific British accent that they had me do. So, you know, you make sure you got the accent down and you knock it out and hope it doesn't suck.
So is it fans that will alert you to
yes.
these things?
As yes.
Not even your manager?
We don't know, because it's all under... Well, I think now they have to tell the agents what the proper title is.
Okay.
But, yeah, back then, nobody knew.
Wow.
As far as you know, you're going in for Firestorm and...
Right.
You know, it's a completely different game.
What are you even allowed to say? What was the? Do you remember what the Grand Theft Auto V like fake code name thing was?
It's probably like bookshelf, you know, or something crazy. You get the weirdest, like the craziest, the fake names in there. It's like camera light. Okay. You have no idea.
Yeah, that's. I love that about your job. Like it's just this. It's if you explain your job without context. To someone in some other industry, like it could sort of sound like spy work.
Totally.
Right?
Totally. Or it's like I'm just like this like marionette just waiting for someone to pick up the strings and make me dance, you know.
Let's see here. What did I want to ask you? You talked a little bit about this, but when you do have a script to work with, sort of what's your process? Do you try to memorize the script or need to memorize the script?
No, unless it's performance capture, no. I don't, because it will often change on the fly, or you know, by the time I get to the session, the script has changed from what they've sent me.
Okay.
So you can't be too tied to the way that it's written before you're actually recording it. But what I'll do is, you know, try to understand who this person is, what's the situation that they're in, who are they talking to, what is this a battlefield? Are we screaming at each other? Are we fighting? Or is this like a more intimate one-on-one, you know? Casual or romantic, or you know, trying to understand the beats and what's happening, because a lot of times we don't have the context of where we are, what's going on in this scene, and that makes all the difference. You know, it's one of the things I love so much about Firewatch was getting to record with my scene partner.
We'll get to that. That brings me perfectly to this. Is so? Do you ask for storyboards or gameplay B-roll or concept art to sort of try and see? And
no, sometimes we'll get concept art. You know, I think I had this picture of Katya on the audition.
Yeah.
But that's a luxury. I mean, we don't really get much to go on.
So you really, in your line of work, you have to, I mean, it is almost the ultimate creativity. You have no visuals, very little even words.
It's all just, in the noodle, man.
It's all between your ears, which I think is awesome. Like
that's
what?
Fun.
Not a lot of jobs, I imagine. I mean, yeah, jobs run the gamut from, you know, you're going to do this one specific task all day, every day, to like you're at the other end of the spectrum. Like it's almost entirely like the words may be written for you, but that's like it.
You know what though? I love it. I love the ability to have creativity with it, because that's, you know. That's the great thing about actors is that everybody will bring a different spin on what's happening. And if my spin is the one that happens to book the job, let's have some fun, you know? I want to make sure that the people that are on the other side of the glass are seeing their characters come to life, you know, because it's solitary for all of us to write a script and have it in black and white on a piece of paper and then to audition it by myself and blah, blah, blah. But to be together and to have that, like, just that spark of creativity between all of us flying around the room where, you know, we're all creating and it's all coming to life. God, it's so much fun. It's the greatest.
Are there roles that you didn't get that you heard them later by whoever got them and you're like, I could have done that so much better?
Maybe, but we're not going to talk about those, Ryan.
That's fair. I'm just like, just as a professional pride, I've got to figure that happens from time to time.
It does, but I mean, the thing is, like, auditioning is such a vacuum, right? So let's say I'm in my home studio, I'm at home, I got my door closed and my headphones on, and I just see the script on my computer, and I've got to figure out a way to make it come to life. So do 2,000 other people, right? If the director, the casting director, is eating a bad sandwich when they listen to my audition, I might not get the role, right? It's the same, it's the on-camera equivalent of, like, wearing the wrong shirt. Right? Yeah. I don't know what's happening to them when they're listening to my audition. So all I can hope is that some of the spaghetti that I'm throwing on the wall starts to stick. And if it doesn't stick that time, you know, it'll stick for somebody else and good for them for getting that role. Because there's enough to go around.
And I got to figure, there's to be, I guess, nicer about it, there's probably other times, too, where you might have auditioned for something and then you hear the final person that's not you, and you go like, oh man, they were amazing.
Oh yeah. Yeah. That happens too. Definitely. And the great thing about the voiceover community is that it's really an incredible group of people. So oftentimes if it's not me that books it, it's a friend of mine. and, you know, we'll go out and celebrate together. Yeah. You know, it's just the greatest group of people. I'm so lucky to work with these people.
Is it mostly a LA community, or is it sort of spread out? Or
I had an incredible community. I have an incredible community here in San Francisco. We've got a great community in LA. I just got back from London, where there's another amazing group of people. I think it's just something inherent in voice actors. We're all just awesome.
You touched on this a little bit, like with the people just tweeting you and sending you things you didn't even know that you were in. But are there like uncredited or super low key roles that you've done where if you tell me right now and a bunch of people will be like, oh yeah?
Well, I think Shadow of War didn't make it up on my IMDb. I just haven't done anything about that yet. Just like background chatter. What else would be interesting? I don't even know. I think honestly people would be more surprised to hear the commercials that I've done and be like, holy shit, that's Delilah.
Well, what's, you talked about those being like the bread and butter. Like, what are some of those campaigns that we have heard you in and may not have realized it?
So in LA and in various parts of the country, I do a grocery store every week. In LA, it's Ralph's.
Yeah.
I do Kroger in the Midwest. I do Fry's in Arizona.
Yep.
Every now and then I'll do Fred Meyer in the Pacific Northwest. I've been doing those for 6 years every week.
It's awesome.
And it's like, stop by Ralph's this week for broccoli, only $2.99 a bunch or whatever. There's a Marriott commercial running right now that's like, it's super like, what if mankind was really kind? You know, it's like totally like intimate. I don't know. It's just all those crazy things. I also do a ton of celebrity soundalikes for trailers. So I do all of Charlize Theron's soundalike work when she's available. Mm-hmm. Who else do I do? Emma Thompson and Penelope Cruz and Rebel Wilson. And, you know, anytime they have they have to change a line in a movie to make it fit the trailer and they don't want to pay the celebrity fees to have them come in and record the line, they'll call me.
Wow. So wait, you end up in the trailer or the film?
Sometimes the film, but most often just the trailer.
Interesting. I never even realized that.
Yeah.
That's
yeah.
so cool.
It's good business.
What a great, that's just like, you can make a YouTube playlist of all kinds of awesome Sissy Jones stuff.
Yeah, it's fun.
That's great. Fun. All right. When I say the name, we're going here now. When I say the name Sean Vanaman, what does that bring to mind for you?
That man changed my life. That man changed my life from The Walking Dead to Firewatch. He's just, he writes his characters so completely. They're so complete when you get them that it's not like I don't know what the hell this is. It's, oh, that's who this person is. And his ability to really zero in on what makes people tick and the different things that make different people tick. He's a genius. I mean, I'm so grateful to have worked with him. And I know that sounds so cliche, but man, that guy changed my life. He did.
As a podcast network, our first priority has always been audio and the stories we're able to share with you. But we also sell merch. And organizing that was made both possible and easy with Shopify. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell and grow at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. They have an all-in-one e-commerce platform and in-person POS system, so wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. With the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms, Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers. Shopify has allowed us to share something tangible with the podcast community we've built here, selling our beanies, sweatshirts, and mugs to fans of our shows without taking up too much time from all the other work we do to bring you even more great content. And it's not just us. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. Shopify is also the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Because businesses that grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/realm, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/REALM now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/realm.
Contained herein are the heresies of Radolf Buntwine, erstwhile monk-turned-traveling medical investigator. Join me as I uncover the blasphemous truth of a plague-ridden world, that ours is not a loving God, and we are not its favored children. The Heresies of Radolf Buntwine, coming January 2nd, wherever podcasts are available.
Well, I think a lot of people might not even necessarily realize, I mean, Firewatch put Sean and Jake and the Campo team on the map collectively, but I think that a lot of people maybe don't realize that Sean wrote directed season one of The Walking Dead. Like, that was sort of his jumping off point, and there's you as Katya there.
Yeah, and that was one of five characters I played in the first season. So I got to work with him a couple of times, and I had moved to LA in the middle of recording. So I flew up for the wrap party in Fairfax or San Rafael or something, and I kind of like zeroed in the crowd, and I found him, and I walked up and I said, "Are you Sean Vanneman?" And he goes, "Yeah." And I said, "I'm Katya." And he was like, "Katya, holy shit." Just gave me, you know, the greatest hug. And it was like, there's no words to tell you how much that guy has meant to me and my family and my career. And like, yeah.
So then you hadn't met him during recording.
It had all been over a phone patch.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah.
He was in on the sessions, but just not physically. You weren't physically in the same place.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So yeah, are some game? What members of the development team do you tend to work with? I mean, you know, I know there's usually an audio lead of some kind, but
sometimes.
Does it tend to be the narrative designer, director, or does it vary?
It is different with every single person. Sometimes it's just the lead. Sometimes they have a dialogue director. Sometimes there's a writer in the room. Sometimes there's marketing people in the room. Sometimes there's the whole team in the room. Sometimes there's nobody in the room. It varies so greatly.
That's interesting.
So Firewatch is certainly where I became aware of you. Respectfully, I didn't realize I didn't,
fine,
you were part of the ensemble. You weren't in Walking Dead.
Yeah,
and I suspect I'm not alone in that. I mean, that is a game that really elevated your profile. I think it's fair to say, and it really was. And I said this in my reviewed Firewatch for IGN. I think it's one of the best voiceover performances ever in any game.
Thank you.
And Richard Summer as well. The two of you were just incredible. And part of it was absolutely the script. I mean, you mentioned Sean, and I agree. I think Sean brought a sort of depth of emotion to those characters that I think we just don't get enough of in video games, quite frankly. It's getting a lot better because of people like Sean, but you know, it's interesting to me it's almost like you're such a perfect fit for that role. And I don't know who that's more of a testament to, you or him, or I guess both of you just equally, but I guess I'm trying to say is you made Delilah feel very, very real, I think is what I can bet, how I can best say it. So you did say that you did get to see the script for that game.
I saw the script the night before we would record, but basically what happened was Sean called me shortly after I met him at that rap party.
Yeah.
And he was like, "Hey, I've left Telltale. I've started a new game. I'm writing a new game. I've started a new company. I'm writing a new game with a female protagonist. Are you in?" And I was like, "Hell yeah." And he was like, "Great." And then 2 years went by and I was like, "Shit, did I lose the job? What's happening? Am I being recast?" And they were just working on getting the company up and running and writing the script and everything else. And then he sent me a little audition because he wanted the rest of the team to be on board with me and it, her name was Alice at first. It wasn't Delilah. It was Alice. And he had me read a sample script, and we got the buy-in from everybody else and waited another year, I think, before they found their Henry. And then we were off to the races, you know. And it was kind of, you know, we would do two or three sessions, and then there would be like a 4 or 5 month lull. And then we do another couple sessions, and then it'd be another couple months. So it was about 2 years of recording.
Wow.
Yeah, just because I think they had to figure out where they needed the story to go. Because we recorded a completely separate ending where Delilah, like, cuts him off two-thirds of the way through and tells him he's crazy and to, you know, bugger off, never talk to me again. And they came back, and they're like, it doesn't work. Like, we Delilah has to be in it till the end. And I was like, yay. And then, you know, so we re-recorded all of that. But I think it was like, they would come to us with the script and say, here's what we're recording. Let's get the conversation going. And then we'd all jump on and, you know, I would record from my home studio, Rich from his home studio. And then we'd Skype in with Sean and record it like an actual conversation. So that helped tremendously to see what was working, what felt real, what jokes were landing or not landing. And Rich is such a brilliant actor. I mean, he just brings like a, I don't know if quirkiness is the right word, but like, you know, there'd be a line like, yeah, yeah, you know, and everyone would go, yeah, yeah, yeah. And Rich was like, yeah, 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 you know, just these random little things that stand out and make it pop and would make Sean and I just die laughing. So to have that kind of feedback in the moment is invaluable. And it's so rare in games. I think the only other game I've recorded ensemble was Batman Arkham Knight. I got to record with Maurice LaMarche.
Nora Freeze. Yeah.
I tried not to pee my pants because it was Maurice LaFreaking Marsh. But yeah, it's a rarity in games to get to record with your scene partner.
But you just mentioned, though, that this was remote. You were not physically in the same room, which is sort of thematically appropriate, I guess.
Yeah, and Rich and I had never met. We live like a mile apart from each other in Los Angeles.
Oh, wow.
We'd never met. I'd never watched Mad Men, sorry. So I didn't really know anything about him other than the team was super psyched about him. So, and the other cool thing is that we recorded chronologically. So that first scene where it's super awkward between Henry and Delilah was literally Rich and I getting to know each other.
That's cool.
Yeah, it was really fun.
Did that, so you clearly, it seems like that you feel like that elevated your performance, being able to play off of him and vice versa.
Absolutely, yeah. He's such an incredible actor. I mean, he's got all the theater background training and you know, he still does a ton of stage and everything else. He's just a remarkable actor. And so having the ability to, me with like nothing in my, you know, in my background other than a business degree, to get to play in that same sandbox was just mind blowing.
So if the script was in pieces for Firewatch along the way, when did you first get the sense that it was going to be something special? I mean, you're obviously, you know, you're already excited. Sean asks you sight with no project.
Yeah.
Are you in? And you say yes. But when did you first get the sense that, oh, wow, this is going to be something good?
Honestly, I was terrified. The night before it came out, I don't think I ate anything. I felt like I was going to throw up all over the place. Because I'd never been a lead. And that's a lot of pressure, because if it sucks, it's on you, but if it's great, it's on you, right? I was terrified. I knew the ending was going to be polarizing. I won't spoil it, but I knew that...
It's been 2 years.
Yeah, whatever. You haven't played it by now.
It was just on Steam Summer Sale. It's a five-hour game. It was on sale for like $5. You should have bought it.
Come on. I knew the ending was going to be polarizing, but I didn't know how well it was going to be received. I knew with Sean and Jake at the helm and Jane and Ollie and the team that they had, with the hype that there was leading up to it, with how beautiful it was and the team that they had built around them. And I knew it was going to be good. I didn't know it was going to be what it was.
Yeah.
And I'm so grateful because that team poured their heart into that game.
Were you sort of keeping an eye on the trajectory of the game, in the sense, because like we, from our side, like we had a pretty good idea that it was going to be something special. Just, I guess, well, partially it's I've been doing this long enough where I kind of have a spidey sense about it. It's not always right, but it, more often than not, it's right. And just from the talent involved and then seeing that art direction, that art style from Ali Moss, we kind of had a feeling, yeah, this is going to be pretty good. And then we had some exclusive gameplay chunk of it that did like over a million views, and we were all like, what? Yeah. And that was sort of when we were kind of thinking that this was... Were you tracking any of that? Were you like seeing sort of the interest, or is that not in your on your radar?
No, because I'll drag myself crazy with that. Because, you know, you always see with, like, a movie coming out of, like, oh, it's going to get so-and-so an Oscar nom and get ready, and then it just tanks. And,
right.
And as an actor, I can't put all my eggs in that basket. Like, I've still got to go out and hustle and get the other jobs and get that going. But I knew with Sean and Jake and Jane and Ollie and Ben and that team, I knew it was in good hands. I just didn't know how big it was going to get.
Did you read reviews?
I did a little bit.
You looking for your name?
Well,
I would.
Because it's super weird. Like, I'd only ever been a side character.
Right.
So it was weird to start having this stuff. You know, Entertainment Weekly did a thing on it. They mentioned Rich's name, but not mine, which was cool because it's still our game, you know, in their must list, which is great. But voice actors we're not used to getting the love. Like, you don't go into voice acting to be famous, right? So it was weird to start seeing my name popping up or people sending me articles or you know, getting marriage proposals on Twitter things like, and some other letters that were a little unsavory. It's still a trip. I mean, I literally just got a tweet yesterday that was like, you broke my heart in Firewatch. Sorry. Thanks for playing. Bye.
Did you play the game? Like, when it came out, are you a gamer? Or do you just watch it on YouTube? Or, like, because if you just built it in pieces, you hadn't seen the full product.
Yeah.
I take it.
I'm a terrible gamer. So I learned how to play on the old school NES flat.
Yeah,
paddles.
Absolutely. Of course.
But I learned to play like this so that I could run super fast and then jump and my feet would still be kicking through the air because I thought
track
it was hilarious.
Track and field. Got to do it.
A little Mario running through the air. So when the new paddles came out and they were all thumbs, I was like, I can't. I don't. And I backed off. And now I don't have the time to pour into gameplay.
Yeah.
But I do watch playthroughs when I can and try to keep up on, you know, what's happening.
You kind of covered how many... the alternate ending thing fascinates me. Sort of riffing off of that, did Delilah herself go through different iterations, or was her sort of, I don't know if dark humor, but just very, very like straight to the point, wry sense of humor. Was that always there, or did she sort of change as a character?
That was always there. That was, and I might be misquoting Sean, and I hope I'm not, but I seem to remember him saying that he kind of wrote that as a riff on me because I'm pretty wry with my friends and kind of a dork. I'm not quite as skilled in the punnery as Delilah is, but so that was an easy shoe to put on.
So when you won the BAFTA for Firewatch,
I still can't believe that actually.
What, like? Can you take me back to that moment emotionally? Because who were you up against?
Oh, my God. I was up against Nolan North. Nolan freaking North for Uncharted 4, who had been winning all the things, rightfully so, because he's Nolan freaking North. And Troy Baker and Emily Rose and Alex Hernandez from Mafia 3. Brilliant performance in Mafia 3. And Naveed Naghabin from 1979 Revolution, who's a tremendous actor. I was not expecting it. I'm still kind of half expecting them to come to my house and be like, sorry, we meant to give that to someone else. I think I screamed holy shit at the top of my lungs when they called my
name.
Fair. I was not expecting that at all.
Because I watched your acceptance speech and it was clearly an emotional moment for you, and justifiably so. And I mean, Of course it is. Did you have a speech prepared? Or did you just have to wing it?
Kind of winged it. Like, I knew who I wanted to say thank you to in the event that anything actually happened. No, I was so caught off guard. It's still so crazy. I mean, I had been voice acting at that point for 6 years. And it was just this like incredible moment of, okay, you made the right choice. You know, I left a very well-paying corporate career and threw it all away to chase this crazy dream of mine. And that was as good a validation as any.
How did members of your family, like husband, parents, react like from that moment of the career change up to the BAFTA victory, win? What does that look like?
When I told my parents I'd been nominated, they were like, "What do you need a bathtub for?" No, I'm just kidding. My husband was always super supportive. My husband, really saw that I was missing a spark in my corporate life. And even though, you know, my corporate life had brought me a lot of things, including him, but he saw just the way that I lit up when I started taking classes and I just kind of poured everything into it. And he was really encouraging and supportive and pushed me to really follow it. My parents, you know, my brother, everyone I'm sure thought I was completely off my rockers mad, but they've been so supportive and so great. You know, it's one thing to say like, I'm going to be an actor and I'm going to show up with my big starry eyes and everyone's going to go, you're super cute kid. Let's put you in a show. But I really put in the work. I really put in the work before I got to LA. I had an agent before I moved to LA, which is not easy to do. And I have an agent who believes in me, who saw kind of my untapped potential back then. Dean Pinero, I'm talking about you. I love that guy. And, having that kind of cheerleadership from my family and my agent and my friends,
It is the secret to pursuing your dreams, though, because it's something like everybody wants to do that.
Yeah.
But it's never, except in the 0.001% of cases, it's never an overnight thing. You have to put in the work. Like, how long are you taking classes? How much grind is going into the moment before you can get here to Katya?
A lot. Took as many classes as I could sink my teeth into for 2 straight years. I mean, 4, 5, 6 classes a week.
Wow.
Driving from Cupertino to Sausalito and back down again. I learned how to engineer so that I could sit in on classes that I wasn't paying for.
Wow.
Because I wanted to be around the instructors and just like learn from the room, because you can learn so much from watching other people do a script that you think you know what to do with. I spent a lot of money and a lot of time making sure I had my shit together before we took the plunge and moved to LA. And it was terrifying. And even once I moved to LA, you know, I booked, I think Walking Dead was my second audition. It was my first job, right? So I had a pretty solid career happening in the Bay Area. And then we moved to LA and I didn't book a thing for a year. A year, man. And, I was freaking out. I was having panic attacks and my husband was still commuting back up here. And, you know, God, what have I done? I've moved our family and I'm failing and blah. And my agent called me one day and he was like, oh, my God, you're so desperate to book. I smell it in your slate, which is, you know, you say your name before you launch into the audition. Sissy, yeah. Jones, da, da, da. And he was like, you got to knock it off, because if I smell it, they smell it. And no one hires desperation. And he was 130% right. And I...
How do you let that go?
Yeah, you find coaches and other classes and find ways to start building up your confidence elsewhere. And you just have to figure out a way to bring it into the booth. And then once I shook myself out of that, I booked Ralph's. And
Was there like a moment or an audition where you felt like you'd cleared that hurdle or...
Never.
No.
It's never. I mean, it's like, I'm pretty confident now because, you know,
you should be.
People know who I am for the most part, or like, you know, I'm confident in my reads. I know what my brand is.
Yeah.
But, you know, there's always dry spells. There's always peaks and valleys, and it's learning how to survive in the valleys that get you through the peaks.
Well, that's exactly what I wanted to cover next, actually, is, you know, you hear in the on-camera acting world, you sort of hear about, like, oh, the Oscar bump, where somebody gets an Oscar nom, or I guess maybe it's just an Oscar actual win, and then they start getting, like, way more offers. And does that, after BAFTA, do things change at all, or is it continue to be business as usual? Not that business is bad, of course,
yeah.
but is there any noticeable increase in things coming your way? Or?
No. I mean, there's more name recognition. So if I'm auditioning for a role against 2,000 other people, and my name comes up,
yeah,
it's
you go right
oh,
to the top of the,
okay.
Yeah.
We know her. Let's put her in the maybe bin.
Right.
But, you know, part of what I really focus on doing is just making sure people know who I am, right? So when I worked in the Silicon Valley, I had this incredible boss who we'd do a brown bag lunch once a week, and he would teach me about business. And one of the most important things he taught me was who you know will get you to the table and what you know will get you through the door. So go out, make friends, be cool, don't be an asshole. Like, it's surprising how relevant that is.
It's true.
and so, you know, I spend a lot of my time making new friends and meeting people and having dinners and, you know, having a good time, because I love this business and I want to work as much as I can. And most of the other people in this business are super, super rad, right? So what a great group of people to make friends in. And then it helps that, you know, okay, people know me from that thing and my name comes up in this other casting and great, let's give it a shot.
Do you get notes on that note? Do you get like little notes or things, text messages from the Nolan Norths or other nominees, other actors after you get a win like that?
No, I mean, I met Nolan and Troy at BAFTAs and they were amazing. But yes, my friends, I mean, Melissa Hutchison, who's been nominated twice, is one of my dearest friends. And she was, you know, oh my God, my phone blew up. I was in such a state of shock. I couldn't handle anything. But I met Ashley Johnson the other day and she was like, hey, congratulations. And I was like, says the 2-time winner. Congratulations to you. You know, it's such a cool group of people. Such a cool group of people.
So, Darksiders 3, which, you know, you're not here for your health. We got to do a little promotion. We got Darksiders 3
yes.
out at the end of November of this year. Highly anticipated game. It's, you know, just, it's one of those IPs from the 360 PS3 era that people really love it and they've missed it and now it's coming back and it's like the original team kind of reformed under a new, like the new old THQ and the whole thing. But, How do you land Darksiders? How does Darksiders 3 come into your life?
Darksiders 3 was actually a really roundabout job. So I have my agent who gets me my normal round of auditions, who I love, and then I have a manager who mostly focuses on promo trailer stuff.
Okay.
Debbie Cope. And she sent me an audition for this video game trailer. And it was 4 words, "Hello, brother, with pleasure." And that was it. And they were like, this is just this badass woman. Like, she's a fighter. She's literally one of the 7 deadly sins personified. Like, she's just a kick-ass, take no prisoners, just ballsy chick. Give it everything you got. And I was like, yeah, okay, I can do this. And so I turned in my audition, and sure enough, they booked me for the trailer. So they had this reveal trailer that came out about a year ago now, where Fury's walking past her brother, War, I think. And she's talking to the Charred Council, and she walks past her brother in chains, and she says, "Hello, brother," just dripping with venom. And then the Charred Council asks her to do something like go kill the blah, 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 and she's like, "With pleasure." And she's got this whip and these iron boots, and it was so boss. And that was it. The trailer came out, had like 4 million views or something insane. And I called my manager and I said, "Do you know who's making this game? Because I sure would love to be considered for the lead. Like, I just did the voice for it.
Yeah.
So I'd love to do the thing." And so we figured out who it was. And then I started calling my friends in the industry and be like, "Do you know anybody at Gunfire Games? Like, I'd love to be considered." And I talked with a friend of mine at WB, and she said, oh, shit, they're making that game? And I said, yeah. And she said, well, let's see if we can get it at WB. So she reached out to her friend and ended up getting the contract to record it at WB. And then I had to re-audition because they decided they wanted her to have a British accent. And so I did my British accent, and I booked it. And, yeah, it's been awesome. So it was totally roundabout. It's not, you know, normally you'll get the sides.
You hustled for that one a little bit.
Yeah, I did. I did.
I mean, it just goes to show, like, when you have a goal, the goal doesn't come to you.
No.
You got to go get it, right? That is the moral of the story.
There is no sitting around waiting for the phone to ring. There's no sitting around waiting for the phone to ring. Because if I'm not out hustling, somebody else is.
Right, yeah. So what was your goal with Fury as you have gotten to know the character here over the course of, I don't know, are you done? Or you got to go back for a little more?
I think we have a little bit more.
Okay.
Maybe. I don't know if I'm allowed to say that.
We know the game's out in November, yeah. So it's what happens between now and then, whatever. It's fine.
What I wanted to do with her was take this badass and make her a little more human in certain ways.
Yeah.
You know, she has an arc and she goes through stuff that I'm not going to talk about. But finding ways to keep her edge, but still bring a level of change to her.
All right, we're going to leave it at that. I like that. Teasing an arc. Fury's mm-hmm. arc. So this is no segue, horrible gear shift here, but I've just got a few more minutes with you, a few more questions.
Okay.
So I'm curious, the SAG-AFTRA voice actors strike was a few years ago. I mean, I've never been in a position like that in the sense of that you want to work, but you kind of have to to play along with what's good for the best of your profession and your future earnings potential within sort of that sphere. So How was that period for you?
It was awful. It was awful. I love my fellow actors, and I also love the devs that I've worked with. We're not on opposite sides here. Like, I think the more you look at it, we all want the same things.
Yeah.
It was really, really hard because the narrative from, you know, driven from the top down was us v. them, and it was never us v. them. It was, let's find a way to make this something that works for all of us. It was really, really shitty.
Are you personally sort of satisfied with the way it ended? Like, do you feel like is it fair enough compromise?
I think in terms of compromise, yeah, it's where we needed to get to at that point. You know, I think there's a long way just to go on both sides. I think, you know, I think there are a lot of conversations that still need to happen.
Yeah. So I know it's, if I'm remembering correctly, part of the resolution was that there's now, I think you get, voice actors will get, a little slice at certain sales milestones. I think there is like
something
a,
like that.
So it's not just, you know, your one day of work and that's it. And the game could sell 50, it could GTA 5 and sell 100 million copies and you get the same
scale.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So that there was that was addressed in some way, right?
Yes.
That's got to feel good.
It does feel nice because, you know, because I did get paid my day player rate for GTA 5 and that's it. And you know, it's not like I have a major impact on the sale of that game as my prostitute. But you know, to know that that we get a little more skin in the game.
Yeah.
Who's not to love about that, you know?
I mean, especially in where Darksiders 3, we're looking at this
right?
could sell many millions of copies.
Hell yeah. But also, you know, they put a limit on vocally stressful sessions, which is huge.
Yes. Yeah, you talked about that earlier.
Yeah.
I mean, I can't imagine screaming yourself to the point of hemorrhaging.
And that's the thing is I remember there was a lot of narrative around when the strike was happening about like, oh, poor voice actors. And I'm, okay, I get it. It sounds very lofty. Like, oh, but I have to scream for 4 hours. I get it. But it's really freaking hard. If you've not done it, you don't know how to do it.
Yeah.
And you don't know that it will wreck your voice. I mean, I have friends who have literally blown out a vocal cord and cannot ever do voiceover ever again.
Wow.
Ever. So that happened. And then also they I believe, have to let our agents know what properties we're working on. If it's a recurring role,
yeah.
If it's a sequel, what the project is, you know. So a little more transparency, which
Good.
Is nice.
All right, a couple more questions for you before I let you get out of here. What's the biggest misconception that people have about your job?
That it's just talking. Anybody can talk. It's not. I get so many people saying, gosh, you know, I think I just want to do voiceover for some extra cash. And it's not that easy. You have to know how to act with your voice and to make it believable and interesting. And also, you have to have a presence. You can't just walk in one day and decide, I'm going to be a voice actor and start working in all the things. It doesn't happen. Unless you're, you know, a celebrity. But I would say that's the biggest thing.
I can't. That's
like anyone going, I can write. I could be a games journalist.
Yeah, fine. I can do this. You can do my job.
I play games.
It's fine.
I know. Shh, please.
So, all right. Your website has this about you. I want to end on this note. It says, besides winning a BAFTA for her performance in the 2016 indie video game Firewatch, Sissy has also cemented her role as a new animation actress to watch for her part as the lead in a yet-to-be-announced new Disney animated franchise.
Yeah.
So that sounds huge.
Uh-huh.
Care to tell me any more?
Wish I could. Super NDA'd on that, but yeah, I'm really excited about it.
I mean, that sounds like a thing that would have been really, really good news when you got that phone call or email or however it came in.
Yeah, yeah. It's that was because that's what I got into voiceover for, was the animation stuff in Disney.
Yeah.
You know, to work with Disney, it's going to be really, really good, and I'm super excited about it.
Is the goal? That's fair. I've signed. I have to do that NDA thing all the time in this line of work as well. So the question now, the real final question is the goal, are you still looking to check off that Be on the Simpsons?
I mean, listen, I would not turn it down. I would love to.
I mean, the show, it's never going to end. So seasons and seasons of storylines yet to be written. I think Nancy Cartwright needs to reach out.
Come on, Nance.
Through representation or however it works.
I actually emailed her after I made the switch to voiceover, and I was like, you don't know me, but you changed my life.
That's awesome.
I heard your interview, and thank you. And she's like, great, cool, good luck. So, yeah.
Throw back?
Yeah, she was
That's
super cool.
That's great.
Yeah.
I love that.
Cool. Yeah.
All right. So, Sissy Jones, Fury in Darksiders 3 out this fall. Firewatch, it's out on pretty much every major platform now. It's
coming to
on the Switch.
It's coming to Switch.
The Switch, yes. Yeah. If you have not played Firewatch, do yourself a favor. Fix that immediately. And we'll look for you on, I don't know if it's big screen, small screen, but Disney something
small
coming
screen.
Up. That's going to be awesome.
Yeah.
And a future episode of The Simpsons as well. I've heard it. You have your list of goals, and you're a motivated, you go get it.
I will.
I'll
be back.
I'm very confident. I'm very confident that if you come back here in a year, you'll have been on The Simpsons. Maybe. I don't know how their schedule works.
Your lips to God's ears. All right. I'll take it.
I think it's going to happen. Sissy Jones, thank you so much
thank
for coming
you,
by and telling me all about your fascinating career and your tremendous accomplishments. You are one of the best. I love hearing you. You made Firewatch one of my favorite games of 2016.
Thank you.
Just a phenomenal performance and a great game. Thanks for coming by, for coming up here, and giving me an hour of your life.
Thank you so
I appreciate
much,
it.
Truly. Thank you.
Sissy Jones, Darksiders 3, coming up this fall. For more on the best, brightest, most interesting minds in the games industry, I do these interviews every month. This is IGN Unfiltered. Please look it up on YouTube, IGN, iTunes, your favorite podcast service, and I'll see you back next month with another awesome person like Sissy Jones.
Hey there, this is Justin Bartha. I made a funny new podcast, King of the Egg Cream. It has the greatest cast in the history of podcasts with actors like Louis Black.
I'm torn by my feelings for two women.
Bobby Cannavale.
You can eat it,
Or if someone hits you, you can put it on your cut.
Melanie Linsky.
I wonder what these marvelous things are that look just like boiled chicken feet.
Jason Ritter.
I can break things and pick locks and kill people.
Michael Stuhlbarg.
The whole point is to inspire people that they should make themselves better.
Ari Grainer.
No, don't whet its appetite. What are you, an idiot?
Me, Justin Bartha.
That's not just any egg cream, that's a Lemke's special.
And all narrated by the hilarious Richard Kind.
This is the story of Harry Dalowitz and how he rose from nothing to become New York's King of the Egg Cream.
So if you like funny true stories, come listen to King of the Egg Cream, available wherever you get your podcasts.